B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Bobby Wayne and Brad from Saliva gave me a chance to catch up with them as they toured Mudfest across the country with the guys from Tantric and Puddle of Mud and Saving Abel and Trapped as well. We talked about lots of things, including what Saliva have going on now. Brad gives us an update as far as how Wes Scanlon from Puddle of Mud is doing.
I will say this, Wes is, he's kind of like, he comes in, he does his thing for soundcheck, goes to the hotel, and then he comes back for his set, and then he leaves again.
Brad also talks about how he co-wrote one of Puddle of Mud's biggest songs. I asked Wayne if he ever thought about doing anything else besides Saliva.
And have threatened for, what, 15 years to do a little solo. And I'm like, man, I'm too lazy. Man, when I get home, I got a kid. You know, I got stuff going on, man, so I never do anything else. This is what I do.
We talked about bands the guys almost joined. A great Eddie Van Halen Shinedown story from Brad. We talked about heroes in this business, as well as meeting some of yours. Like, for example, Bobby meeting AC/DC's Brian Johnson.
One of my dads, we just had close friends, and they knew them. And we went to Sarasota to see them in 96.
My guests today are three quarters of the guys from Saliva. Today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Seems like forever since we did a Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast, but we're back at it. Thank you so much for listening. Today, I'm joined by the guys from Saliva, at least three quarters of them, like I said in the intro. Brad, Bobby, and Wayne are really good dudes. Had a chance to catch up with them on this Mudfest tour, and so we'll get to that here in just a minute. But first, a quick plug for Al Beck and Rock News that's going to come afterwards. And what's going on with the Woodstock Festival? An injury in Aerosmith, an update from Ozzy, as well as someone getting a doctorate right here in Detroit, a fellow Detroiter. We'll tell you about that coming up here in just a few minutes as well with Rock News with Al Beck. In the meantime, good dudes from Saliva. They're out there touring, like I said, and they were coming through the area. I thought, you know what? Let me sit down with these guys on their tour bus after their set and talk all things Saliva and a ton more, which is exactly what we did. I've known Brad Stewart, of course, since his Shinedown days way back in the early 2000s. Wayne and Bobby, I've kind of become friends with, I guess, in the last, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years through Brad, just kind of hanging out and doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, just really good guys, as I've said before, and I say it all the time. I know it sounds kind of like a broken record, but they are super good guys. And they go out on stage, and they kill it, and they love interacting and mixing with the fans. And it's just a good thing to be a part of. So I asked Brad, I texted him, I said, hey, would you mind sitting down with me for an interview for the Talkin' Rock podcast? He's like, absolutely. And I guess they don't do very many of these things, so it was kind of cool that they let me in their lair in their world and, you know, to talk about all things Saliva and a ton more, which is exactly what we did and what we're giving you today on Talkin' Rock. Hey, guys, first of all, thanks for taking the time out here with me. You guys got to get a little bit closer here. So, oh, nice shirt, by the way, Wayne. Like that. Yeah, there you go. Wayne, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, brother.
I was told to talk to you about fried green tomatoes. Is that true?
I got the best fried green tomatoes you ever ate in your life, man. You got to. I'll come up and make you some sometime.
Is that true, Brad?
This is a true story. This man could cook collard greens like nobody's business, bro.
Yes.
Soul food master right here.
Yeah, so I've heard. So anyway, so Bobby, I'll start with you. So tell me about, you know, what's going on with the band, what you guys have happening right now.
We are currently on the Mudfest tour. There's a lot of dates, 2019. They just keep adding them, like, every week. So with Puddle of Mud, Trap, Saving Abel and Tantric. It's been fun. It's been great. We've done a lot of shows so far, and like another 270,000 to go, and then we're ready to
just. Well, let me ask you about this, because we were just talking about this before earlier today. That you got like little kids and stuff. I mean, do your kids get to see you play and stuff?
Sometimes when we're in Florida, when we're in the area, they come out and. But you know, for the most part, we pretty much hang out in the Midwest and like all over the other parts of, you know, country. So only tourists, it's hard.
Yeah, they gotta watch Dad's rock stardom through the internet or something, I suppose, right?
Yeah. I'll send them videos or stuff, but for the most part we just FaceTime and I talk to them about what they did, you know. So
Now, the last time I saw you guys, of course, Tasha wasn't a band. So I'll start with you, Brad, since you're like kind of the closest to her with the percussion or the bass or whatever. So tell me about Tasha. This is the first time I've seen her, man. She like hits friggin' hard.
I'll tell you what, man. Like, you know, we love Paul Crosby, the original drummer for this band. And he's always our bro. And but I'll tell you, you know, when Tasha came into the band, it was at a time that was kind of crucial, I guess, for her to come in and do what she does, and I will say this, man, people respond to her and the way she plays, and it's been really good. You know, like, you know, chemistry is tough to just sort of you just don't have chemistry automatically, so you kind of have to feel each other out, and the chemistry sometimes falls in place, you know, and that's kind of how it's been with her and everything, and you know, we've rehearsed a couple parts and a couple things, you know, with the way things go, especially as bass player and drummer goes, you know what I mean? But so far so good, man. We love her, dude, and she's got a great following, and like she's happy to be here, dude, and that's kind of like it makes a difference, man. Like people that feel like they have to be here, and then people that feel like they want to be here, you know, it's you have to want to be here because you're away from everybody, and like you're, you know, it's a different situation, you know. So, but she's killing it out here, man. She's doing good.
Yeah, she slams. And I mean, like Brad said, this is not to say anything bad about any past members, but it's a breath of fresh air, and it kind of, you know, gave us a little like a B12 shot. You know, getting her the band, she slams. I mean, she slams. She's 110, soaking wet, and hits harder than any guy I've ever played with.
Yeah, she does hit hard. We were talking about that beforehand because, like, Haley Kramer from Pop Evil and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. And plus, her and Brad probably share, like, hair tips or something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, everyone thinks that we're related somehow. Like, that's my sister or some shit. But I'm like, no, we're just, you know. I didn't know her before this, but whatever. You know.
Now, Wayne, you're the last man standing here as far as original members go.
OG.
So yeah, the OG, yeah. How important is it for you to keep the band going?
Oh, well, I mean, I never even thought about not keeping the band going. You know, when we had guys kind of leave, retire, you know, for whatever reasons, I mean, it was never even a thought in my head to quit. You know, it's what I do. I've been doing it pretty much my whole adult life, so.
Wayne is competitive.
Wayne doesn't know what else to do besides watch Raiders football.
There ain't no quit. If I'm still a Raiders fan.
You're going to follow him in Vegas, by the way?
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Like, there ain't no quit. There ain't no quitting, you know, at all.
That's why we're still doing this. He's saving up to move to Vegas.
Damn right.
Hey, I know the draft was just yesterday, and you guys are all about the draft and all about the football and stuff. But yeah, how does it make you feel to go out there on stage a packed house here like this site? You know, people want to still see Saliva.
It's crazy. Crazy cool, man. Especially here in Detroit, it means a lot. This is a big music town. You know, Harpo's is a legendary site. So to be able to play to a full house here, it does something to you, you know. That's good. Good. I'm feeling good right now.
Yeah, that's cool. So what kind of stuff do you have lined up in the future? I know you guys were talking about, Bobby was talking about, like, you know, doing all these gigs and stuff. Are you guys going to be recording anything new or?
Probably before too long, but mostly the rest of this year is just touring, you know, doing some stuff. Couple of things in the works, you know, maybe. But Bobby knows more about that than I do. He's the business guy. I just show up and play guitar.
And do a good job at it, I might add. So, yeah, after all these years. Yeah, no doubt. So let me just, I'll just run down the list here. Okay, so we were talking about Mick Mars earlier, you know, underrated guitar player as far as I'm concerned. Give me an underrated frontman.
Wayne Sweeney.
Wait,
hold on. No, wait. Underrated frontman.
Front man.
So, in your line, what do you think? Underrated frontman. Who do you like that you don't just, you don't think gets enough praise?
Of all time?
In your thoughts.
Man, I don't know. That's tough.
That's a great question.
That's
man.
One of those I'll probably wish tomorrow I would have known the answer to. There's a lot of great frontmen though, you know. I think there's a lot of, it just takes a certain level of confidence and not forcing it, I think. You know, people.
I think I just saw something the other day, but maybe you can relate to this. Dee Snider says you got to be an egomaniac, narcissist, the whole thing.
Absolutely. He's one of the greatest frontmen ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really. I mean, he's doesn't stop. There's a lot of good frontmen, though, man.
All right, we'll come back to you. What do you think? Underrated guitar player. What do you think, Wayne? What do you got?
Greatest underrated guitar player. Wow. See, I should have been thinking about this question while he was thinking about the singer.
Brandon, I'm coming to you next. So,
All right.
Let me take a 20-second timeout and go to Brad.
All right, Brad, what do you got?
You know, it's odd because I love bass player. Is it a bass player question? Okay, so, you know, bass players are always underrated, man. So it's like, man, what are you going to say? You know, like Les Claypools, the Fleas, all the badass bass players, the role. But there are some like James Jamerson and, you know, like.
Jamerson is hardly underrated.
Dude, he's not underrated. He's a badass.
Right,
But here's my thing is like, I like Robert DeLeo, you know, like the Stone Temple Pilots.
Awesome.
Like everyone, no one ever. Does anyone mention him? He's a producer. He's like a
he's badass. He's
a sweet guy. Like I've met him several times in different bands that I've opened for them, in Stone Temple Pilots for. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, man, I'm like, why doesn't anyone mention him? He is a genius. And then I try to figure out his bass parts, and I'm like, shit, man. I'm like, I'm still trying to figure these parts out. You know, like, but they're like tasteful, and they're placed well in the mix and in the song, and I'm like, he's a songwriter too and a producer, so I would have to say that's my pick for underrated person.
Robert DeLeo.
Robert's great, cool. Man. I love that guy.
Yeah, dude. He's awesome. So what do you say, Wayne?
You know what? I'm going to lean on that and go Dean.
Dean.
Because he is equally as great, and when they first came out, the way he was playing guitar was definitely different from everyone else. You know, it was... It fit in with the scene enough, but he's a straight-up Jimmy Page guy, and I love that, man, because I'm old school. I love that old school stuff, and he's that unapologetic about it, but he was able to mix his influences and the new style and come up with something that was unique, and that's really hard to do, so I would go with Dean DeLeo, too.
All right, Bobby, so now we're back to you.
Man, I still don't know, dude. Frontman, like, today, I just don't know
Robbie
enough
Erickson.
New stuff. Yeah, no. How about Michael Starr from Steel Panther?
He's there a you go.
Michael Starr, one of my favorites of all time. That's right. All right, Brad, I'll start with you on this one here. Okay, let's throw some questions out to you guys. So, what was the highlight of your career?
Ooh, highlight of my career, man, I've been doing this as a pro since probably 2000, and honestly for me, like, I started this as a songwriter, and I got into this business because I was lucky enough to be flown out to California by Fred Durst years ago, almost 20 years ago.
A Jacksonville guy like yourself.
Jacksonville guy like myself, Fred, and T-Bone, my bro on drums, and Paul Phillips, you know, guitar player, and Fred flew us out to back this guy that which we're on tour with now, and it's like surreal, the fact that Puddle of Mud is out here and we're supporting them, and so we get flown out there to support him and his band, and I try to write a song with him or whatever, because we learned his songs or whatever, and then next thing you know, they're like, yeah, you need to write some new songs. So I was lucky enough to write a song with the guy and the band, and the rest is history for me, because after that song was written, I ended up with a publishing deal, and the song became their first single. So Control was the song, and I had another band, and we played that song, and my band guys were like, yeah, that's pretty good, man, but anyway, what about my idea? And I was like, but my idea is pretty cool. I thought the thing was great, and they were like, no, it's not that good, but
So did you write the music for that?
For the music. I didn't write the lyrics. That was all Wes Scantlin. So when I presented the riff to him, we're in a slum, basically, in fucking Los Angeles, right? You know, like, actually, it wasn't SIR. It was Cole Studios down there, where Rage Against the Machine just did Evil Empire. This was that long ago. It was a long fucking time ago.
Yeah,
so,
the 90s,
so
yeah.
It was nice. But this was about 2000 or whatever. So Fred and we all fly in and stuff, and they're like, you're not going to even go to the hotel. You're going to go straight to the rehearsal room, right? So, okay, no problem. So anyway, so we go in there. Next thing you know, I present the riff a couple days after we've been in there. And Wes had a notebook, and he flipped the pages over. Next thing you know, dude, literally within 10 minutes, we were rocking Control.
That's
and
it
had the smack my ass shit. The whole fucking thing was going on there. And I was like, at first I was like, smack my ass, but I don't know. Is that cool? Maybe it's cool. I don't know. Maybe it's cool. And then I was like, I'm not going to protest. But anyway, you know, and then years later, you know,
the song still generates thousands of dollars, and it's a great song, and they play it in the set. And
yeah, I even heard you rip off a little lick of it tonight.
Yeah. When he said "Follow the Money," I just kind of had to because I made a dollar or two maybe, but you know. But those guys are my friends now, and Wes was never at odds with me. It was more like the lawyers and the other freaks in the music business trying to fight me on it. But you know, it was a good story, and you know, it was like a I got the chance to be flown out there and ride with the guy, and next thing you know, they're that record went four times platinum at least, so 4 million records.
So Wes is out on this tour, and how's he doing? I mean, you guys see him a little bit.
I will say this: Wes is he's kind of like, he comes in, he does his thing for sound check, goes to the hotel, and then he comes back for his set, and then he leaves again. I think for him, personally, like that he is avoiding enablers and people that can make him screw up again.
Which is smart, you know.
Come on, I mean.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm just glad, happy to see him happy again, doing well.
Yeah.
Doing great, sounding great every night too.
He's like giving me tips on, like, you got to take Zantac, bro, before you go to bed every night. Zantac.
Take Zantac before you go to bed. Like, wow.
That's how you keep the voice.
Yeah. It's great, though, man. It's good to see you, man. It's good to, you know, America, you know, we love to see a rebound, a comeback story, you know.
Yeah.
And I think Wes is a great example of that. You know, he's done it. He's done it right. He's doing it right
now. Yeah, he's looking good, sounding good on stage and all. So I'm looking forward to seeing the show.
They play 75 minutes, if not longer. Like, he doesn't want to get off stage.
Right. Yeah.
And before, he used to leave the stage.
Or his band would just leave the stage.
Four songs. So it's a little crazy. So now we're like, Wes, you can go ahead and, get on. You did what you need to do, brother. You know, whatever. But, like,
well, Wayne, let me ask you about the highlight of your career. And before you answer, I'm going to give you the highlight of what I think your career was. I'll never forget being at Ford Field down here for WrestleMania with Donald Trump. Ladies and gentlemen, was the theme music. And Trump was there. And I think it was a hair versus hair match with Vince McMahon and Stone Cold, if my memory serves me.
That is absolutely one of the highlights. We've done some really cool stuff with WWE. Over the years, we got to do WrestleMania 18 in Toronto, at Sky Dome, Toronto. That was probably the biggest crowd we ever played to there. And I mean, I literally looked out from the stage, and the people across were like little tiny little ants. It was like almost 70,000 people.
What song did you guys play that night?
We were doing the Dudley Boys theme at the time.
Okay.
So we came out, did Dudley Boys theme. Let's see, Drowning Pool was there. They did their song. It was cool. We got to hang out with all the wrestlers. You know, it was a good two or three days of just hanging, having a good time. They took care of us too.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll never forget watching that. You know, that was the whole theme for that whole thing right here in Detroit. I want to say that was about, it's got to be 12 years ago, something like that, maybe.
At least, something 12, 13 maybe. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, Bobby, what do you say? What's the highlight? What's your high point so far in your career?
Man, there's been so many cool shows. I mean, we went to Australia, Europe. Them knowing every word to the songs is great. I think it's good. I would say, I don't know, man. We've played some pretty killer shows. The one that we did, you know, 10,000 people and the whole front row was all naked chicks. That was cool.
Whoa! I want to hear about this. What's that all about?
some bike rally we did. You know, just some.
Yeah, because you guys play like Sturgis and stuff a lot, right?
Because they're naked doesn't mean you want to see them naked.
That's when I knew. That's when I knew I made it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Naked biker chicks. All right. Was that like a Sturgis gig or what?
It was somewhere in Indiana at a big rally. It was like 10,000 people, man. Yeah. It all goes craziness.
It was nuts.
And I think I still got a picture somewhere. It's pretty hilarious.
Now, the other day, I was talking to Damon Johnson. He's a big, I love Damon. Yeah, Damon's great. For sure, I will.
We played in the band together.
You did? When did you play with Damon?
It was right before Brother Kane, you know, got signed, did their stuff. Yeah. Band called the Delta Rebels out of Memphis. Hey, Damon, what's up, bro?
What other bands have you played with or that we might know of? Or after Saliva?
That's really pretty much it. Damon and I, we got to play together for about a year or so, maybe a little more than that. before Saliva, before Brother Kane and Saliva happened. But
you were never approached backstage by a drunken, really pissed off husband because his wife was backstage with him, like Brad and I were.
No, that's right. Yeah, and we had our bro from Kid Rock back there, Aaron. Right. Aaron, the bass player. Jules. Yeah. And we were like, why is this guy so mad at us, man? And he came back there like he was pissed, dude.
We didn't even know what's
and
going on.
We were
on.
Like, no. Why is he so mad? Because somehow his wife had managed to, and her friend, remember, came back there, and we were like, man, like.
You hear about this?
You don't know. That was, where was that?
It was a Fuel.
That was with Fuel. That's right, dude. Yeah. And me and Meltdown were like, why are they so mad at us, man? Like the guy, and he was pissed. Yeah, he wanted to stab us. Right. We were just like, I don't know. And then the bass player from Kid Rock, you know, Aaron Julison, stands up and goes, "Hey, bro, you need to go ahead and get the out of here, or you might not see tomorrow." And we go, and the guy looks at us, and
right on.
Next thing you know, he goes out, and we're like. He put the fear of God. Remember? Me and you were just like, why is someone so mad? There's no problem.
Yeah, we were just hanging out. His wife was back there. We didn't tell her to stay back there or nothing.
I didn't even know how she got back there. Yeah. Man.
Hey, so you've been in a lot of bands, Brad. Was there any bands you tried out for that you didn't make?
Well, Puddle of Mud.
Early on, yeah.
Well, you know, and Rob Zombie, when Blasco was going to Ozzy, I was still in Shinedown, and we played a couple shows with Rob Zombie, and John Five was in the band, and his yellow raincoat and all this. So they were, you know, they knew Blasco was leaving to do Ozzy, it was the Zephyr Hills show down in Tampa. What is it? It was Earth Day Birthday, and there was
Livestock.
That's what it was. So for whatever reason, you know, we had a lot of 98 Rock down there in Tampa loved us. Same with, you know, the station down there in Orlando. So anyway, so I'm playing with Shinedown, and for whatever reason, I decide to destroy the drum set and destroy the entire stage. So John Five looks at our tech. He goes, "Does he do this every night?" Because I was just so inspired, you know, I was having a good time or whatever, you know. So he goes, "Man, does he do this every night? This is awesome." And he goes, "What's his number?" And the next show, he goes, Hey, bro!" And he's in his skull mask and his whole thing and his outfit. He's about to go on stage. He goes, "Give your number to Chet." I think it was his name. I can't remember the guy's name, but that was his tech.
Yeah.
And so I go, "Sure, man, absolutely." I didn't know. I did not even know what he wanted from me. You know what I mean?
Like, could have been the next Piggy D.
But I didn't know that Piggy. You know, whatever. And their tech, his name was Grape. Love the guy. He saw me, and he's the one that called all those guys out there. Next thing you know, I'm looking at side stage, and Rob Zombie is watching me play bass, and they're like, they wanted me to be in the band. So they asked me, and I go, "Man, I'm kind of obligated to be in this other band, like Shinedown."
Was this like right at the beginning?
No, this was 2000. I want to say 2006. I had been in the band for at least one record. We had done the second record. There was a lot of drama, and I was actually kind of miserable in that band anyway. But I was trying to be sort of loyal and a trooper. Yeah. And I was like, and literally Rob Zombie was asking me to be in their band, and I go, "Man, I don't know that I." Legally, I could left the band. Maybe I guess I could have if they fired me. I don't know. It was a weird scene or whatever, you know. So I basically told them no.
Oh.
So yeah. Fast forward to 10 years now.
Hey, well, hold on for 1 second. So how long? Hold on. So how long after you say no to Rob Zombie do you leave Shinedown?
Well, I was fired from the band 6 months later.
Okay, so 6 months.
So that was the real. Tough part for me because I was like, man, I could have just rolled into Rob Zombie's band. They wanted me in the band. They wanted me to play for them. And Piggy D is awesome, man. No disrespect. And you know, John Five though. And every time I see John Five at NAMM or anywhere else, I go, I think about it every day that I did not, that I sent out. You know, like, what is wrong with me?
And you're not too far away from where John grew up.
I know. Who says no to Rob Zombie, man? But I did because I was being loyal. And then the band fired me. You know,
you could have made enough money to pay your lawyers and been done with it and the whole thing.
Don't remind me. Thanks.
So Wayne, do you ever you know, try to maybe even get into a different band or maybe put an end to Saliva or what?
I have literally never had a single offer to be in another. And I'm pretty sure why, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm happy about that. It's been pretty easy for me. Just stay the course, you know. Keep my spot in the bus. Stay with Saliva. Do this thing, you know. And have threatened for what 15 years to do a little solo. And I'm like, man, I'm too lazy. Man, when I get home, I got a kid. You know, I got stuff going on, man. So I never do anything else. This is what I do.
What about you, Bobby? What do you say?
Man, this is pretty much it.
Really?
This is what I've done, man. I've devoted my whole life.
Yeah.
To this.
Thank you, by the way.
Well, I got a little sidetracked talking about Damon Johnson, but the reason I brought it up is because Eddie Van Halen, he's a big Eddie Van Halen fan. Brad has like one of the greatest Eddie Van Halen stories ever. You know, you guys know that Eddie Van Halen story. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and he was telling me, you know, different stories and whatnot, but that tour with Eddie Van Halen and VH was pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because Shinedown was just starting out and we had literally just got off tour support and they go, but by the way, if you guys want to do a tour, I mean, Alex Van Halen has personally chose you guys to come and play and open for Van Halen for like 2 months, you know, and Silvertide, our bros, Nick Perry and Walt and all those guys and Mark Melchior and you know, Brian, everyone. So they're our friends and they were like, they were opening the first part of the tour and we're like, okay, well, let's open the second part of the tour. The problem was the label was like, okay, but can you do it in an RV? And we were like, no, we just got off tour support. We were going to go in a bus and whatever. So anyway, we ended up in a bus. So 2 nights go by. We're in Chicago. So here, let me set this up very quickly. We're like, okay, so the tour is mainly arenas. There's the United Center. There is the Staples Center, which was 2 nights in a row in L.A. Nice. Or whatever. You know, so and we never met the Van Halen folks, you know. So first day we roll in there and we're like kind of going our dressing room. And they said, you know, basically you're not going to get paid for the shows and you're not going to get invited to catering. Right. And we go, oh, okay, well, so we're pretty much on our own here. Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
We'll get a fruit plate or not there.
It's fine. We're opening for Van Halen, man. It's fine, right? So you know, Eddie comes around, and he's at the time he was pretty crazy, dude. He was really kind of out of his mind. He'd be drinking wine during the day and all this and all that, you know. So you know, I don't want to talk anything about it. He's most respectful. I love his playing and everything. You know, most amazing guitar player ever. But so we go into our dressing room. And we see this deli tray in there, right? And there's, you know, there's turkey and there's, you know, whatever, rolled up meats in there or whatever, you know? And then, so we're like, okay, cool. Like, you know, and then next thing, I go use the bathroom. So does Brent, our singer. We had just started the tour, Chicago United Center. And Eddie comes into our dressing room and he goes, hey, man, nice to meet you guys. You know, when he has his guitar on and everything. Like La Bamba, he has his guitar, like, yeah, literally like strapped on him. It's on him. And we were like, hey, bro, what's up? Yeah, and he was mad because there was a Crate amp in there because Jason had a Crate amp that he would warm up with, and apparently Sammy Hagar supported Crate amps, and he was like, effing Hagar, man, fuck his Crate amps. And we're like, dude, it's just a practice amp, man. We're not trying to, like, offend anybody. So here goes. So our singer goes to the bathroom.
Yeah, Brent Smith from Shinedown.
Brent Smith from Shinedown, yes. And so he walks out and shakes Eddie's hand because this is the first time he's seen him in our dressing room. And Eddie goes, man, WTF, man. Like, you shake my hand after you just went in there and took a piss? What is this, piss on my hands and all this? And Brent, of course, is a sweetheart of a guy. He's a southern guy. You know, he's from Knoxville and shit. So he goes, yeah, Eddie, come on, man. Like, sarcastically, like, yeah, I just pissed all over myself, and now I'm going to shake your hand. I mean, like, he respects Eddie, right, you know, whatever. So so Eddie kind of got offended, man. So he stood up, and he whips his dick out.
any
in your dressing room.
In our dressing room. Yeah, we're in our dressing room.
Oh my god.
And we had just got to the tour. We were happy to be on the tour. We were like, wait, we're just happy to be here, man. Like, don't talk. Yeah, whatever. So he stands up on top of our table where our merch, or not our merch, our
food tray,
and our stuff is sitting there, and he pulls his cock out and he proceeds to piss.
He's on your food.
On our food, but before he did that, he stuck his smoking cigarette inside a turkey roll up, and he's pissing on the turkey roll up with his penis out, and we're just like sitting there like. Oh, I don't even know what to say to this at this point, you know. And then the thing he extinguished. So yeah. so what we were like, yeah. I mean, we didn't want to get kicked off the tour. So then he goes. He proceeds to piss enough to extinguish the cigarette inside the turkey roll up, and we're like, okay, well. And he goes, feed this to your tour manager. It's called the smoking gun. And he walks out of the room, and we're just sitting there like, we didn't know whether to clap or like be like, we don't want to be like, you know, like he hates us now, or we don't want to get him in trouble or anything.
Dude, that is one of the greatest rocks.
And listen to this. So like I said, we were never invited to catering. And then we hear over the radio, they go, okay, from now on, Shinedown is invited to catering. no more deli trays for Shinedown.
Nice.
We were pissing ourselves, dude. We were dying. We were like, it literally happened that fast. It was like his guitar tech always walked around with him. His guitar, I can't remember the guy's name, and he always walked around with him. And he must have said to somebody, he's like, you know what? No more deli trays for Shinedown. And after that, he was completely sweet to us, man. He'd come in there all the time, man, and shit. It was great.
That's amazing.
Did you ever have a chance to meet Eddie? I mean, you got to be a big Eddie fan, right, Wayne?
I'm a huge Eddie fan. I haven't had a chance to meet him, but if I ever did, I would hope to God that he would pee on my daily train. Yeah, that's all I could ever hope for.
Who are some of your idols you've met in this business?
Got lucky enough to meet Joe Perry. You know, we got to do that Kiss Aerosmith tour, opening up the outdoor shows for a while.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember.
So
yeah.
That was kind of a I can't believe we're freaking here moment, you know, every night. But we were so beat up because the days off, you know, they were just doing a show, day off, show, day off. So the days off, we were like driving 1,000 miles to do a show and then come back to do those shows. So we were beat. But, That was great. You know, gosh.
Eddie Kiss stories? Didn't they make you park like away from the
open? Literally, they parked us in general population. So like, we're not even backstage where all the buses and
you guys had hit songs out.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah. But we're out there with all the fans, and we're out there throwing football and getting wasted. You know, well, kind of. Maybe we were, maybe we weren't. But yeah, but we had a good time with it, man. And plus, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. You know, we threw it out there just as a to our management, trying to get the gig, and they came back and said we got it. We were like, holy crap! You know, we got to go open for Kiss and Aerosmith. So that was cool. That was way cool.
Now, what about you, Bobby? Who are some of the idols you've met since you've been doing this?
Tony Iommi was pretty awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that was good. Meeting Dimebag years ago and Vinny years ago and stuff, you know, when I was like 15, was fucking badass.
Yeah.
I met a lot of people.
George Lynch.
Yeah, George Lynch. Freaking Ozzy, man. I've met a lot of people, man. It's been cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool life that we get to lead, you know. Brian Johnson, really.
Young, AC/DC, when I was like 12.
But that wasn't when you were in this business, though. I mean, how'd you get to meet Brian Johnson when you were 12 years old?
One of my dads, we just had close friends, and they knew them. And we went to Sarasota to see them in 96. And
really?
They got to go backstage and stuff.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
So is that maybe what may have inspired you to become a singer?
Yeah, music was always, you know, in my family and stuff. And, you know, generation. My grandfather was a singer. My dad was in music, so I was basically raised, forced into it. But it came naturally, you know, for me. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, what's the support like from your family for what
good.
You do?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, your wife and kids and mom and dad and the whole thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What about you, Wayne? You got some family around still?
Yeah, same here, man. My family's always been great, you know. been very supportive and, you know, never gave me too much crap about missing holidays and stuff. So
yeah, as long as you got to keep working, right?
Right. Got to keep working, man.
Hey, didn't you tell me you got a motorcycle or something?
Yeah, man. I mean, everyone was really mad at me for getting a motorcycle. I got three now, but I don't get much time to ride, so nobody's really worried. So, but we're talking about getting a pit bike to bring out here, you know, on the road. Yeah. So, watch out, everyone. Watch out. Yeah.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, guys. Thanks so much for the time. One final question for you. If you could be any sex toy you wanted to be.
Oh, no.
What would you...
This is Bobby's favorite question.
No, I'm just kidding you.
You know what? If those people are listening, they're fucking idiots anyway. Those people that ask me that question, they know who they are.
Oh, my God.
Not sure why somebody would ask that question. I got to be honest. I've never asked that. What? Okay, I'll tell you what. Real fast. Last stupidest question you've asked besides that one.
Oh, man. Well, it was from the same people, I want to say.
Well,
it was,
they asked you one
question? That was just the last straw for me.
Oh, I see.
But I think they asked, I don't know, they probably said, how does it feel filling the shoes of Josie or something? And that was just another dumb question.
Yeah.
That was just... way old, you know?
Yeah, I've heard that one a few times.
Yeah. So, Wayne, what are dumb questions you get?
Someone asked me what my favorite color unicorn was one time. Yeah.
I thought unicorns were multicolored.
And that's good. It was the same guy. Yeah.
Same guy.
And that was kind of my answer was, I don't know how to answer that because I like them all.
That's right. I like them all.
Yeah. Brad, what do you say?
Man, I don't know. I think a lot of the questions we're asked are pretty stupid. I mean, it's just one thing. I'm like, if you guys are going to ask us questions, like, do your research. Like, you know the band. You know what's happening, man. You're like, so I'm like, when people ask us certain questions, I'm like, they're like, so where are you guys from? Where are you guys, you know?
They're going down the Wikipedia list.
And I'm like, if you don't know where we're from, we probably shouldn't be talking right now at this point. You know what I mean? So that's probably the dumbest question I've ever been asked because I'm like, and if your listeners don't know where we're from, it's a little bit like, man, come on, man, do your homework. Like, you know, ask us something that's compelling or something that's inspiring to us. Like what inspires you? What creates the songs? Like, what makes you do this on a day-to-day basis? And what inspires you to make new songs and shit like that? To me, those are good questions. You know what I mean? Like, shit questions are like, hey, man, like... you know, it just kind of like when the interviewer does their homework like you do, which we love you, man. So, you know.
Well, it is funny because I watched you guys up on stage for your half hour, and you guys got your half hour, 40 minutes or whatever, and you guys have played those songs, I mean, how many times? You know what I'm saying?
And that
is a good thing. It's like, how do you get inspired every single day to play those songs? I mean, you're working, or you spend, you know, 23 hours a day trying to fill your time, and then an hour, I mean, you just take the bull by the horns, just go after it, eh?
It's the crowd. It's the fans, man. That's why.
The fans is what makes it inspiring, actually, dude.
End of the day, the crowd, the fan response is what does it. Every night.
And our crew guys are amazing. Yeah. They like kill it. They like they set us up,
just
man.
Saying that because they're here. Right?
I know. Well, they bought pizza and stuff.
They're also looking at us right now.
Right.
Just kidding. But hey, at the end of the day, they get us on stage. We kill it. They fix stuff when it needs to be fixed, and they inspire us. And we also know that out front and in the back and in the as far as the drums go, like you know, Scotty and Lee and Phil Pagano. They know what's going on, and honestly, you know, we're friends with all the bands on this tour, but we're also here to kick their asses and kick the fans' asses. Not really kick their asses, but we just do our thing, and you know, they end up getting their asses kicked.
Just kidding.
All right, well, it's time pizza's come. So you guys, hey, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the time. It's been fun, man.
Bro,
appreciate
we love you, man.
Thank
anytime,
you much, man.
Thanks, man.
Anytime.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
There you go. Wayne, Bobby, and Brad from Saliva on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And good dudes. I say that all the time. All these bands I talk to are really good guys. I actually have an email floating around right now for a band that I was just talking about you with. I don't want to say what it is because I'll jinx myself again.
As soon as you say it, it'll disappear.
You realize that the last time we talked about this legendary bass player from a legendary band coming on, they had to postpone.
Yes, they did.
So, anyways, but so
this is supposed to be the make good.
Well, we're supposed to get that coming up this week, but I was just telling you earlier about an interview I want to do with a band that I'm not really that familiar with. The guy is such a nice guy. It's like, I just want to talk to him because I think that, he's just a good dude. So we're going to try to get that on coming up here in the future. I floated an email to his management.
And I love the promotion process here. Hey, cool guys coming up. Just stay tuned.
That's right.
We could literally be talking about anybody.
I know. But, those guys are just good dudes. Wayne's a great guy. Yeah. He's like I said in the interview, man, he's the last man standing from that band. Yeah. They started out as a five-piece. And then, Josie left. And finally, their original drummer just left last year. And this girl, Tasha Jones, she was in this band called the Dead Deads. And I don't know if you ever saw them, but they played in this area here in the Midwest. They toured with Hailstorm and Stone Sour last year. Man, she friggin' hits hard. Like, I just saw, like, Pop Evil and Haley Kramer's out there, right? Yeah. And all these female drummers, and they just kick so much ass, you know? And I feel like, I don't know, maybe this might be a little bit sexist, but I feel like they have to, like, kind of overwork to make up for, you know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So,
not that it's right, but.
Well, whatever.
Sometimes it's just, they have to.
Sometimes you have to,
I got you. I see what you're saying.
So, anyways, it was funny because after the show, she really didn't talk to me much before the show. The guys introduced me to her and whatnot, and she's like kind of walking around with her headset on and stuff and her hoodie over her head and stuff, and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, she's getting ready for the show, and that she was, because afterwards, she was, not a chatterbox, but she, like, talked. She's like, she even said, she goes, hey, I really apologize for, not really talking to you before the show. That's just, like, kind of getting in my zone. I'm like, hey, that's cool, man. You do what you want.
Yeah, no, I'm similar to that, too. Like, if we go and do stagers and stuff like that, like, don't try and have a conversation with me before I go on stage. Even if I'm just going to be up there for 2 minutes, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, and you want to come up and have a conversation, walk away. I'm not right now, and it's a much smaller scale than that, but I can relate to that.
Yeah, so we're sitting there, and she had a couple drumsticks and stuff, and there was a couple on the ground, and I said, do you want me to throw these out? She goes, no, I sell them at the merch table because they're broken and stuff, And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Some of these bands, they do that. They sell their stuff at the merch booth, Hey, look, these bands aren't making millions of dollars.
Right.
And so, they got to do what they got to do. So if you get a chance, get out there and support them. Puddle of Mud was great, man. I have to be honest. Let's see. I saw the guys from Saving Abel. I saw Saliva. And then Trapped was actually playing while we were doing that interview. I didn't get a chance to see them. And then we went out and watched Puddle of Mud for a little while. Mm. And Wesley's, of course, had his battles in the past.
Yeah, it seems like he's doing a lot better now, though.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to him, but I guess he, as Brad was saying, Wayne, he kind of sneaks in and sneaks out. Yeah. And so you don't really get a chance to, he's just trying to... He's just trying to, extend his sobriety, I guess. Yes, he's trying to stay away from things that could, kind of affect him and influence him.
Yeah,
so
good for him for turning it around, though. I know he had some trouble with the law before he got sober and stuff like that. So really kind of going, getting it flipped around. So good for him.
Hey, quick story about Wes Scanlon from Puddle of Mud is that I've interviewed him a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. Great guy, really nice, and I really pull for him. I pull for the guy because I feel for him. But one day I said to him, this is going back 10 or this got me 12, 13 years, or maybe even longer. But I said, is it true that you actually made up a fake backstage pass at the local radio station in Kansas City to get backstage to give your demo to Fred Durst? Did you know about that?
No, I had not heard that.
Yeah, and so as Brad was talking about, Fred kind of hooked Brad up with those guys, and they wrote Control and whatnot. And he says, he goes, yeah, I carry it around in this Bible in my back pocket all the time. And he carries around this Bible, or at least he had at the time, with this fake backstage pass.
To be fair, we have real passes that look fake. So I don't know how many times I busted out my radio station ID and they're like, I don't believe this is real at all.
Right. Well, we make them here. But
I know exactly. Yeah.
Just tell them you're me and then move along.
Yeah.
So anyways, there's Al Beck, and he's got your rock news that you can use drugs or not, or do whatever you want with it. But this is just time filler. they told me these podcasts have to be so long. So no,
yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, this is my entire career based on this concept. Just filling time.
That's right. Just filling time. Mm. So anyways, the first thing you brought up to my attention was this Woodstock thing. And the last thing I had seen was that, I don't know, I saw something about tickets or something. I really wasn't paying attention to the whole Woodstock thing, but they decided to nix it, huh?
Yeah, Woodstock has been officially canceled as of this morning when we record this podcast together. And they released a long statement, and it's always about how hard we worked and, you know, we really were dedicated and blah, 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 blah. But it's all skip ahead. To despite our tremendous investment of time, effort, and commitment, we don't believe the production of the festival can be executed as an event worthy of the Woodstock brand name while also ensuring the health and safety of the artists, partners, and attendees. Some more blah, blah, blah. They decided to cancel the festival, as difficult as it is to believe, blah, blah. Reps of the festival say concerns about the capacity of the festival, site readiness, and permitting issues led to the cancellation of the commemorative event.
This almost reminds me of that Fire Festival. Have you seen that on Netflix?
No, I'd heard about it, but I have not actually seen it.
It's an awesome documentary. Yeah. They decided to throw this big, gigantic festival, and of course, it turns into a colossal dud.
Yeah, it was a complete fiasco.
Yeah. But, you know, I was at Woodstock 94 when you were just like a thought in your daddy's eye. But, it's kind of cool to get out there. You know, I got to be honest, I wasn't really crazy about the lineup, anyways. When you start bringing in these crappy pop bands and stuff, it's just not for me.
Yeah, they're trying to get a little bit of everything, and I can't remember who it was, but one of our bands, like a Cage the Elephant or something, had to jump off because of a scheduling conflict. I'm sure they're actually kind of happy now.
Yeah, it's like when you're jumping off of Woodstock because of a scheduling conflict, you would think they would be making adjustments to get on Woodstock.
Right.
Because in 1994 and 1999, man, those things were gigantic. You know, speaking of Fred Durst and whatnot, 1999, those guys and Kid Rock and all those guys, you know, I saw the one with Metallica and Nine Inch Nails. I mean, 1994 was like, you know, it was amazing. So goodbye Woodstock. Yeah, maybe all for the better.
Yeah, maybe so.
So anyways, Joey Kramer, I guess, hasn't been playing with the guys in Aerosmith that residency they've got in Vegas.
Yeah, now we know for sure that they had to cancel a date, but Joey Kramer had a minor accident is what the band is revealing. He said he's totally fine, but he did hurt his shoulder in the process, and he won't be playing at least that first couple of gigs there for their residency. They didn't really go on to elaborate how long is he going to be out. I think they're at the Park MGM in Las Vegas.
Okay.
No real information, just that he injured himself, his shoulder was hurt, he's fine, couldn't play, but they got a lot of dates during this residency, I think up through November. So if you're planning on going out to Vegas and you thought maybe Aerosmith, he might be back by then, but not a whole lot of details as of yet.
Yeah, who did you say is? Did you say who's filling in?
I did not say.
Yeah, they said something about it, but you know, Joey Kramer's a good guy. He just sits back there and keeps time and whatnot. But people go there to see Joe Perry and Steven Tyler. They are the toxic twins, the bad boys from Boston, and whatever
he
else
sits
name
back
you
there
want.
And keeps time. I like that.
But yeah, the other three guys in the band are, you know, of course they're legendary. To you know, each of them are.
Yeah.
But you know, like I said, it's really about Joe Perry, and that's evident because when Joe Perry went off did his Joe Perry project, and whatever else, their other side projects don't really fly. Like when they're together, you know,
right.
And that happens with just about every band you can think of, whether it be the Guns N' Roses guys. You know, I think David Lee Roth, actually, when he broke away from Van Halen in the late 80s, you know, kind of had us, you know, he had pretty decent success. But outside of that, I can't think of too many other bands like that.
No, not at all.
So, hey, anyways, let's skip forward to Ozzy. And I guess Ozzy's back on the mend. And I saw that they rescheduled some of those dates with Judas Priest, which would be a kick-ass concert here in the States.
Yeah, well, the latest update on his condition that we got was actually last week from his son, Jack, who, you know, kind of in his own Jack sort of way, tongue-in-cheek, was saying, you know what, when dad's complaining about mundane things, you know he's good.
Yeah,
you know,
he said
when the biggest problems in the world is that everything in the house is broken and nothing good's on TV, dad's his old self.
I can imagine that, sure.
Exactly. So he's given the thumbs up, of course, on Ozzy. And like you said, they've gone through and started rescheduling some of those dates. So obviously not ready to hit the road just yet, but he is on the mend. And it's kind of good to see Ozzy is feeling a lot better.
Yeah, those dates that they rescheduled are in early 2020. So no dates, I don't think, for the rest of the year. When it's all said and done, history's going to look back on Ozzy as the guy who canceled the most dates. I mean, seriously.
I think so, yeah.
I met Ozzy for the first time. I think it was the seventh or eighth time I was supposed to meet him. I had interviews lined up with him. We had meet and greets. We had all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And he canceled, postponed, blah, blah, blah. And I happened to run into him on accident in a runway in Cincinnati when we took some listeners down to see him in a private, you know, Learjet type of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a long story for another time. But that was the first time I met him. And that was in the 90s. He was canceling dates all over the place then, too.
Yeah, well, he's lived a life. we'll say that. He's lived a life.
Well, I remember the first No More Tours tour. Now we're in the second one 25 years later or something like that.
Yeah. You know, and likewise, I had seen earlier today, just looking around on the internet, you know, Mick Jagger talking about his heart issues and stuff like that. You know, they're talking about canceling dates. He's talking about working really hard to get back up on stage as soon as possible. They're also not able to reschedule just yet.
Yeah. Well, that's a big giant machine. You just can't say, hey, let's do this because they got football stadiums and different things going on. Hey, switching gears to Jack White here. So he's been given an honorary doctorate. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So that's Dr. White, by the way.
Dr. White. Yeah.
Dr. White. The Wayne State University, which is here in Detroit, which is also where Jack White is from, is actually bestowing upon him an honorary doctorate. Per Wayne State, White will receive an honorary doctorate of humane letters degree. And so that's the thing. It's not even for his work in music. It's for his dedication to Detroit and significant contributions to the arts as one of the most prolific and renowned artists of the past two decades. But so obviously bringing attention to Detroit, yes, as being a guitarist, but also he's done so many great things like, you know, with the
Masonic Theater.
Masonic Theater, thank you.
Yeah, donating all sorts of money. Masonic Theater, for those of you outside of the area, it's like a really nice theater. It was built, years and years ago, and they say that the place is haunted. How many rooms does that place? It has hundreds of little rooms. You can't even, they give tours and stuff. And that place, he kind of donated a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder about, some of these places that, bestow these honors upon some of these guys. I wonder if it's like, hey, let's just see if we can get Jack White to come here. How can we do that?
He did attend Wayne State for a single semester.
Okay.
Back in 1994.
Well, that's more
and
than
that's
I
all I got. Yeah, well, you know, exactly. But, I guess it's not Dr. White just yet. He will be receiving this honor on Friday, May 3rd. And then from then forward, Dr. White.
And then he can tell his parents, look, I spent one semester at Wayne State and look at me now.
That's right.
So, Dr. White, you will refer to me as doctor.
I went to broadcast school. Where's mine?
Well, that beats me then. All right, give your socials there.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF and at Talking Rock with One. And of course, feel free to leave a message on the feedback line, 248-586-2988. I know it's been a week or so since we've done a podcast, but things are starting to ramp up now as I've got some interviews in the works. So hopefully we'll be clicking along here as usual. So as always, thank you so much for checking out the podcast. Share it with your friends and the whole thing. And check back often because we have a lot of good guests coming up. Thanks so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.